is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Middle East politics, Israel, you see this news story the other day here. Israel is accused of planting mysterious spy devices near the White House. It's an interesting story. There's a lot more to that, obviously. President Trump talks about this $15 billion bailout plan for Iran, potentially. Of course, things are getting pretty heavy out there in Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu comes out and talks about toppling Hamas. Interesting comments there. Also, this Google antitrust deal here. We have 50 attorney generals are going after Google with antitrust investigations. This is going to get real interesting. This gets into your search. There's some precedent here that we need to look at and talk about that, which we will do. A lot of stuff, friends. As always, in the news here, let's get to the top stories here. I want to welcome on here Colonel Jim Warshak. Colonel Warshak is retired from United States Air Force. He's a career senior intelligence and special missions officer, former deputy director of intelligence in U.S. Central Command, served on the White House National Security Council staff as intelligence aide to the National Security Advisor. Captain Stu Swerk is also here. He's a retired naval officer with operational experience in the Middle East and Western Pacific. He is a semi-retired now defense contractor living out, as he says, in the red state of South Dakota, which I got to tell you, Stu, look, sounds like beautiful country, especially this time of year. Good to have both Jim and Stu with us here. Let's start off with the Supreme Court. And this the asylum limits that this, again, was a big boost for the Trump administration. The deal with this, people, is that you can't hop multiple countries. You know, the idea of asylum is that your life is in trouble. You're in jeopardy of some sort or whatever it might be. So you can't go through three or four countries or even in some cases a continent or two and then say, you know, seek asylum at the United States southern border. That was the big edge and the big controversy on this story. And the Supreme Court said, well, while this thing is moving forward, we're going to honor that. And that President Trump was in his rights to do that. First of all, a couple of things. Stu, let me start with you on this. The first thing is there's the immigration. Finally, the numbers are falling at the southern border. A lot of it is because of the way the president has handled, obviously, the politics down there. But it's a tinderbox, clearly. This was a big ruling, though, with the Supreme Court kind of getting back in the reverse of the Ninth Circuit, you think?
I think one of the great parts of this story is that the left has been using these federal district judges to essentially extend their sanctions nationwide as opposed to limit it to their own federal district court jurisdiction. And even the Ninth Circuit narrowed the San Francisco judge that originally put in the sanction, and the Supreme Court actually upheld the nationwide enforcement of the new Trump administration rule. So that's a great thing to narrow the focus and the span of control of these left-wing federal judges. That's a big part of the story.
Yeah, it is. And in fact, the whole judge conversation and the level and the amount of judges the Trump administration has put into play here is probably more historical. And that could change the Ninth Circuit moving forward. We'll see where that balance is. But yeah, it's been tricky for sure. All right, Colonel Warshak, on this particular case, this was a big deal, obviously, because this kind of the numbers have started to fall there on the border. Plus, they are putting up the new wall, even though there is a denial on the left about that. But immigration, this is a big conversation, and it's going to continue to be coming into the 2020 election. Good move by the Supreme Court here?
Well, it was the right move by the Supreme Court to defend the president in his effort to protect the nation, and that's part of his responsibilities under the Constitution. And so for the Supreme Court to, you know, deny that or, you know, appeal any decision, that would put them into a situation, of course, there would be a counter appeal. So as Stu said, the impact of the district judges played into that. The Ninth Circuit Court ruling And as you mentioned, Trump is placing more and more conservative-minded judges onto the Ninth Circuit Court. So all this is coming into play. The other fact of, yes, they're building the wall slowly, but they're building it. They've added additional security from various National Guards on the border. Mm-hmm. And I think the message around the world and other countries are, you're not going to get into the United States any longer by just showing up at the border and claiming asylum. You've got to do it from the place of origin where you're leaving from in the first country you enter. Right, right. So I think that is really having a big impact on it.
Another big story here is McCabe. I want to talk about this story about the Inspector General's report. If you might remember, guys, back in October 2016, painted a deeply troubling picture of McCabe's conduct. And we're speaking of Andrew McCabe here. He was a number two at the FBI. The New York Times this week reported that the federal prosecutors appear to be in the final stages of deciding whether to seek this indictment against McCabe. Jim, what's the story on this? What do you think happens? Do they move forward with that? And does this man see prison time?
It's more likely now, especially after multiple attempts by his attorneys to appeal his situation under the IG report. They were trying multiple times this week to get that removed. And at this point in time, there's a high confidence level that he's going to face charges. And I really think he will get jail time or some kind of punishment.
Stu, do you think he gets prison time, or do you think he just goes to bed without dinner?
I still think it's a 50-50 proposition, but I'm leaning more towards the likelihood that he's going to see some jail time. Mm-hmm. A couple tidbits here. First of all, this particular decision was associated not with the FISA business, but going way back to the Hillary Clinton email server conundrum. So this is a result of the previous OIG report. We're still waiting for what transpired in the FISA abuse, and it's very likely that he's going to face some problems there too as well. The other thing that's interesting is that it's not widely known, but his attorney, Michael Bromwich, mm-hmm. is the same one that was Christine Blasey Ford's attorney during the Kavanaugh hearings. Quite interesting that the same left-wing guy is representing both.
I can only chuckle, Stu, at that, man. But no, I did not know that. That was a circus and a half here. You speak about the FISA there, Stu. Now, did you see in the last few days here, the preliminary report from Horowitz has now been given to AG Barr on the FISA abuses. What do you think? Any confidence there?
A reasonable shot. Of some real justice being served. It's difficult to really know what you hear about this in the press, because there are so many people trying to spin it in different directions. Yeah. Obviously, the cabal has an interest to spin it to try to get themselves off the hook. But we're just going to have to wait and see what's in there, and whether he makes referrals. That's the key thing again.
That's exactly it. Yeah. You know, most of these reports now are coming out, and they initially, you always get the headlines that they're a bombshell or something happened, but then they seem to fizzle and nobody seems to go away at all. Jim, you seem to be confident, I think, or are you?
I'm more confident today than I was 2 days ago. And as Stu said, the charges that are likely on McCabe right now go back to what his involvement was with the Hillary Clinton email case. And so we're going to wait and see what comes out on FISA when that gets released. The other thing that you have to watch what's going on is Attorney John Durham, the special attorney that William Barr has brought in to do the inside investigations. He's the guy who's bringing in people and, you know, essentially reading them their rights, saying, okay, we know you did this, and he's causing them to talk and reveal, okay, well, I did this because I was directed to do this by this other person. You know, some people think, well, he'll walk, but he's probably not going to walk because, you know, he's one of the linchpins in all this, but he will reveal a lot of his seniors, what their involvement was, and, you know, try to get a lesser sentence. Yeah, that's going to be the critical stuff over the next 4, 5, 6 months.
Yeah, I think we're all curious, Jim, as you say there, to see who gets thrown under the bus. But there's going to be a lot of that. There's going to be a lot of name calling and finger pointing, clearly, because as Sue was just saying, the right word, the cabal, I mean, it's significant. And it's in its entire deep state apparatus here, for sure here. Was Bolton, first of all, two things here, Stu. Was Bolton the right guy for the job in your heart of hearts, number one? And number two, any surprise that he was fired?
That's a difficult question to answer. I would say that Bolton was a good pick if for the only reason to agitate and aggravate the existing foreign policy establishment.
I mean,
that's what Trump likes to do. He likes to stir things up. So Bolton definitely did that for him. So yeah. Bolton's one of these love guy or hate the guy, depending on what your point of view is.
Yeah.
And his basic goal seems to be to see the eventual demise of all of the enemies, the real enemies of the U.S., Iran, North Korea, or whatnot, and maybe not wipe them out per se, you know, from a war point of view, but at least weaken their economy so that they really have no real threat to the U.S. So in that respect, I think he was simpatico with Trump. But I think Trump wants to go back to the old great power politics and conduct a more restrained foreign policy. So that probably set him at odds with Bolton. Yeah. So
that's, I like what you say there, Stu. And you're right, though. And Trump has an interesting playbook, which we obviously talk about if we're around here. But it that's fascinating here with Bolton. And, you know, Jim, I could see what Stu says. It is funny because you could see Trump doing that just in spite of it all. And which you've got to chuckle, clearly. But it is a playbook that changes. As you pointed out to me before in previous broadcast, Jim, National Security Advisor, it's a role that's going to change from time to time. It's not uncommon at all. Who replaces Bolton? Who's the 1-2 pick that you would put in there?
Well, right now, as of Friday, I think there's probably about 15 people that are being looked at. Hmm. And for me, the number one guy that I'm looking at now, and that's a guy, Steve Bagan. And, you know, he's currently the U.S. representative to North Korea in a special envoy capacity. And, you know, he's being considered, he has a really good relationship with Secretary Pompeo. And, you know, he's also a businessman. He was one of the senior executives at Ford. And Trump, being a business guy, likes that kind of person. There's a couple, 2-3 other guys in there that would come into play.
Listen, I want to talk to you guys next about two things. One is the Democratic debate, which was in Houston this past week here, and also this story still going on in a potential impeachment inquiry here, which actually did happen. The Judiciary Committee, which is headed up by Nadler, they approved and they're moving forward with an impeachment probe officially. I mean, they've always been looking at this from day one, obviously, people. But meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, she's kind of been really sidestepping this whole thing and is real careful about using the I word, although some people think she's strategically holding back until closer to the election before they try to drop something on there. You know, the whole impeachment thing, it's like all of the effort and energy and oxygen in the room is to try to find something to impeach the president done. There's something that just doesn't seem American about this. Jim, you know what I'm talking about? It doesn't seem American when you spend all your energy, time, put on, let me find something to impeach this president. I just don't like him. I don't like his politics. I don't like his mouth. I don't like his Twitter. So I'm just going to impeach the SOB.
We have a Democratic-led U.S. Congress who is hell-bent on finding a way to get rid of this president for all the reasons you said, don't want him there. And they're pushing this idea of impeachment, which if you look into what impeachment is, they don't have the grounds for it. They have nothing to back
exactly.
it up.
Exactly.
It's all a distraction. They're desperate. They've been revealed who they are with this whole Russia collusion and FISA and everything else that has come about over the last year, and they're looking for a distraction. They're going to try to impeach him in the court of public opinion.
That's
and
it.
You're going to hear all the mainstream media, and they're going to be hitting that every day.
And Stu, back to that distraction a moment here and the whole impeachment thing, which we've talked about here. I want to slide slightly over and talk to you about the Democratic debate in Houston, please. Now, interestingly enough, Stu, the impeachment word did not come up there, which was a surprise because typically they've done that before. So listen, I don't know how many out there of you did watch the debate, how many of our audience watched it. Now, believe it or not, though, there was an uptick in viewers at this particular debate, I see, and it had an estimated 12.9 million viewers on ABC and another over a million on the Spanish-speaking Telemundo. So it did have an uptick. So people were watching this, I guess. I have not watched any to this point, Stu, honestly. And I went to turn it on the ABC channel there that it was on, and the first three candidates I heard were talking about white supremacy and the president and just all this rubbish. There was no policy being discussed or anything else. So I just said, you know, I'm just not going to handle this. I'll go back to reading the transcripts on this thing when it's all said and done. So what I did at that point, Stu, I want to give everybody a secret, and so I turn this to you. I go to Drudge Report and just look at the top and see what they're saying. And here's what happened at the Democrat debate. Klobuchar breaks out. Debate gets personal as candidates go for the jugular. Biden ties himself close to Obama. Suffers problem with teeth. Castro hits age, healthcare clash, this is America, Beto goes on gun rant, Warren's still dodging middle-class tax question, Harris hits Trump, a real small dude, and candidates laugh at Yang's free cash contest. Did I miss anything, Stu?
The only thing he missed is the accusations of white supremacy and racism against the president, which is completely absurd because just this last week, the president announced that he was going to lift that ban on federal funding on faith-based, historically black colleges and universities. Yeah, that really makes him a racist and a white supremacist, doesn't it? I mean, good grief. These people are laughable. All of those topics that you listed, Malcolm, are extreme leftist oriented. They're absurd. They're essentially they're warmed over socialism made into the American political sphere. There are things that a rational person just thinking through the process of each one of those is going to come to the conclusion that these people are lightweights. They don't know what they're talking about. They're out there just trying to raise some awareness and bring money into their campaigns by whatever promises they can make.
Trying to get attention. Yeah, they're trying to get attention, clearly, Stu. I mean, that's all it is. Look at me. I'm the big person in the room here. Stu, I think this has the chance potentially, and I think you might agree with it, to really play back into their face. I mean, I think they're pushing the envelope, the entire far left there. And I'm going to guess that I think America is probably on to them, based on what we just talked about and what we've said. So this could really backfire, is what I'm suggesting, Stu. It could really backfire.
I think they're hoisted on their own political petard. And the reason why I say that is because the impeachment investigation into the Russians' collusion, which has been determined to have been a hoax. You know, for 2 years, it liquored up their base, the people that don't really pay attention all that much. Those people have been expecting the orange man bad to fall by the wayside at any point over the last couple of years for any number of reasons. And every reason and every attempt has failed miserably.
Yeah.
But the problem is all these people are liquored up, and their donor base in particular is keen on going down the impeachment path. So all the things that they're pushing, that their base is pushing them, is really going to take them over the cliff.
That is well said, Stu. That is well said. Listen, last story I want to cover with you both quickly is this. And so as we move forward here, just a moment here, people, we're going to talk a little bit more about Middle East politics. There's some very interesting stories. But I want to get your guys, your opinion on this story. And Stu, just take a minute. And this was these, they called them mysterious spy devices up near the White House, that they were being accused that Israel has planted those, so they said, and that was the stories leaking around the last couple of days of the week here. What was your take on that, Stu, your initial reaction to that story? Did you, your gut feeling is what I'm asking. Do you think there was any, because nobody really knows at this point, do you think there was any truth to that, or do you think that there's something more to that story?
I frankly don't trust anything in the media anymore without definite confirmation and name sources. The first article I saw about this particular topic came from Politico. Mm-hmm. And Politico, of course, is a left-wing rag. And in virtually the first sentence, they say that their sources are, quote, three former senior U.S. officials, unquote. Well, I wonder who those officials could be. Could they be anti-Trumpers that got booted out of the Trump administration? Or could they be, in fact, Obama appointees, former Obama appointees? We don't know. We don't know their intent. We don't know why they came forward with this story at this point in time. Mm-hmm. I'm very skeptical, put it that way. Now, that said, everybody spies on everybody these days.
That's right.
We spy on Israel. Israel spies on us. We spy on the Brits. They spy on us. We spy on friends. We spy on enemies. And those friends and enemies spy on us as well. That's the nature of the beast these days.
That's it, buddy. That's exactly it. And by the way, Stu, Politico is my go-to rag for everything far left, by the way. I read it religiously, just for the record, brother. All right, Jim, what do you think about this story?
Well, I have to agree with what Stu said. That's exactly right. You go a little bit further, though, on the devices. These devices called stingrays, which are they mimic a cell tower so that a cell phone searches for a tower and it goes to this device and then it can intercept the conversations and everything. But those things are all over D.C. The Chinese put them there. The Koreans put them there. The Russians put them there. They're all over the law enforcement agencies and those people who look for that stuff, they find them all the time. Who put them there? Who knows? Now, there is some information out there that three government officials or former government officials, one of the names that has surfaced on that is Ben Rhodes, and we all know who he is. Mm-hmm. He is one of Obama's senior national security folks. So, wouldn't put it past me to see that this is perhaps an Obama and the far left effort, at least story wise. And I've talked to a good friend of mine who's been involved in Israeli business and works in Israel and New York. And, you know, her position was the same as mine was. This is an effort to embarrass the Trump administration. Israel has elections coming up this week. And so they were trying to show that this is going on between Israel and the U.S. to kind of put a damper to that and hope that Netanyahu wouldn't win the election. So I think it's a lot of the story is a propaganda plant to just besmirch the Trump administration and their friendship with Israel.
Yeah. Well, which has been on display here for sure. Stay right there, friends, as Viewpoint rolls on here.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutLoud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Device they put here, which tricks the cell towers or phones to go into them like they are a cell tower and allows you to get all kinds of information, what have you. Let's just put it this way. This is not the kind of device you can buy at your local Walmart. that was the accusation here. Let's start there and talk about that. And I'd like you to welcome on here IQ Al Razouli. It's good to have him on. And IQ is the Iraqi-born Arabic speaker. He is, as you know, on this platform, is a weekly columnist here, but certainly one of the foremost authorities in the world on the subjects of everything Islam and the Middle East politics, for sure. He's the author of Lifting the Veil. It's a trilogy you can find on Amazon or the America Out Loud bookstore, friends. Also, Ilana Friedman, is here. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst. She's a political commentator host here at America Out Loud. And again, let me tell you her new book, Hamas, The Story of Islamic Jihad on Israel's Front Lines. That is available on Amazon or the America Out Loud bookstore as well, please. Well, you'll find all kinds of books from our experts and our guests as well. It's a terrific place to hang out and to favor these fabulous people here. Okay, IQ, I'd like to start with you on this story about these mysterious, they're saying, spy devices, which again act like cell towers, planted around the White House. Again, the first reports came out of Politico, and we know what that means there, but they were reporting that these subscriber identity catchers, known as IMSI catchers, they collect data conversations and they pin this on the Israelis. IQ, what's the any information you have? Do you think this is true? Do you think that they are doing this, or is this a setup, or what's behind the story?
Every country spies on every other country for military, political, economic, technological, and any other reasons they deem important for themselves. It is interesting that these accusations have surfaced just before the Israeli elections and just after the dismissal of John Bolton. I find it extremely difficult to believe that the Israelis planted spying devices outside and or near the White House when they can do more through internet systems as they did with Iran's nuclear centrifuge. The report came from Politico, not at all a very reliable source, especially when all we are told, as always, that these allegations were made by anonymous FBI agents. Similar anonymous sources that accused Trump of colluding with Russia to gain the presidency. Although it is not impossible that such devices have been found, They could just as easily have been planted by others to implicate Israel. The historical records show that America spied upon its allies as well as her allies did, and most definitely continue to do. Even President Trump said that although he does not believe the report, he cannot dismiss it completely either. Neither can I.
You know, the key word, IQ, you're so right when you say anonymous. People remember that, please. All these stories, reports, and headlines you read across the spectrum on all these publications, you notice that it's always an anonymous source. I mean, that is the key takeaway on every one of these things. In other words, you don't know where the BS is coming from or not. On any story, I'm talking about any story across the board. IQ, I want to ask you one follow-up real quickly here, and that is, you mentioned John Bolton. What was your thoughts on his dismissal this past week? Was he the right guy for the job as the National Security Advisor, and was you surprised to see him get the your fire treatment?
Yes, I was very shocked. I didn't like the way he was dismissed. I mean, if he doesn't agree with the president, fair enough. Resign, no problem. Mm-hmm. Fair is fair. But the way it was done, according to the reports that I have read so far, that he wanted to resign, the president told him, wait and see, and then he fired him. Yeah. I thought that was really underhand. As you know, I have never criticized Trump in the last 2.5 years plus that I've been with you. But in this case, I think it was very underhand.
Interesting. Well, I appreciate your honesty always. And remember the word anonymous, though. We don't really know what those reports, what really happens, do we, IQ? Well, what goes on behind closed doors? All right, Ilana, so what do you think? What do you think when you hear IQ open that up? What's your thoughts on this?
First of all, it was published in only one outlet, which was Politico, and it was picked up by others, but always referring back to the Politico article. It is unlikely, very unlikely in the extreme, that Israel would have done something so stupid. Since the Jonathan Pollard affair in 1987, that Israel has been very, very careful not to do anything that would rattle the cage of Israeli relations with the United States. Mm-hmm. And certainly during the Obama administration, there was enough going on that was negative. They certainly would not have wanted to do anything else. And now that there is such a good relationship between the White House and the Israeli government and the Israeli prime minister, there's no need. because there's a tremendous amount of intelligence sharing between the United States and Israel. In addition to which, Israel has policy, and its policy is vigorously implemented without exception. And that was a phrase that was used both by the Prime Minister and by the Israeli embassy in Washington. These allegations are just nonsense. Now, how did it happen? Israel produces, does it make this technology? Does it have it? Probably yes. That technology in Israel is unbelievably very sophisticated. And it is possible, even likely, that they've developed such devices. They have a robust R&D industry, and they're very far ahead of the curve. They're probably number one or two in the world in terms of innovative R&D. And more than that, they sell their technology all over the world. So the idea that another actor could get involved and plant such devices around the White House is not so very far-fetched.
That's right.
And I think that is probably what happened.
Yeah, okay. Wow, very good. Ilana, I'm thinking here as you were talking and listening to IQ as well, when you talk about the spying, and it's the same thing that Colonel Jim and Captain Stu had said in the previous segment, quite frankly. Let me say to you that I think back of Ronald Reagan days when Reagan used to say, yep, we trust and then we verify. Boy, isn't that the statement of the century when it comes to dealing with whether it's, IQ says, whether it's allies or enemies, whatever the case is, right? That's the essence of spying. It's the essence of everything. Trust, and then, yes, we're going to verify, right?
Malcolm, by the way, if you think that we do not spy on Israel, I have a whole list of stories I can tell you about how America does spy on Israel. Not only in the United States on Israeli, what they consider to be Israeli assets, but also in Israel proper, recruiting in Israel to get spies to
I'll tell you what, Ilana, I'll tell you what, one day you and I will have story, I'm serious when I say this, we will have story time with Ilana and we'll get into all those stories. How's that? We'll do it on Voice of a Nation. That'll be
Got
fun.
Lots of them. Okay.
That'll be good
yes,
fun.
It would.
Story time with Ilana. I love it. All right, let's talk about this this other story here. This was a surprise, I believe. But let me bring folks up to speed on this here. So President Donald Trump, what I'm hearing is he's considering a French plan to extend a $15 billion line of credit to Iran in return for the Islamic Republic's compliance with this 2015 nuclear deal. And this is what was being reported here. And there were multiple sources, they said, with knowledge, that said of the president's conversation with Emmanuel Macron about this here. IQ, what do you know about this? And is there anything to this potential $15 billion deal? Do you think there's this could happen? And because, you know, our relationships, obviously Trump has been very critical of any dealings with Iran. What are your thoughts on that?
A $15 billion deal with Iran, if it agrees with Trump's conditions on the nuclear deal, would be a great achievement. Only if it includes what President Reagan, just as you mentioned a few seconds ago, said, trust but verify. Unhindered verification and inspection of any place in Iran that it deems important to inspect. Otherwise, it would be a worse deal than the original. The $15 billion must be spread over a period of time, depending on how the mullahs follow the agreements. Maybe this was the straw that broke the camel's back between Trump and John Bolton. Especially because John Bolton knows that every Muslim is mandated and sanctified by their God Allah never to fulfill any agreement with infidel kuffar, non-Muslims.
You know, he says, okay, if.
Well, I'm opposed to it altogether. I think what we're doing over there right now is working. The Iranian economy is crashing, and the army personnel are not being paid. They're not even being given food. They're very unhappy and unsettled. And the government is worried about the possibility of some sort of revolt in the army. They are making moves in Syria. They're moving a lot of personnel, including something like 50,000 regular army troops to moving to Syria, maybe to be cannon fodder in an upcoming war. We just don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on. They're moving IRGC officers over there in great numbers. So it looks like they're building a war up in order to deflect from their economic catastrophe, which is going on in Iran now. I think anything that we do to bolster that government would be a very big mistake.
Wow. Two different interesting perspectives. I like that. Ilana, I hear you loud and clear. What you're saying is we could potentially be at the tipping point in Iran, maybe, finally. And let me just circle back 1 second. IQ, there's been a lot of reports with the military in Iran with what Ilana says, and I've seen that many, many times now, including the Revolutionary Guard even, which is usually, as you know, IQ, highly protected because they are the protectors. I mean, they get first dibs, and even they're having trouble with, so things must be pretty rough in Iran. Do you think that, I mean, serious question, do you think that potentially, IQ, they could be closer to a tipping point of mercy? Is that even possible with these people?
At the moment, I don't think so.
Let me move on to the next story, please. I want to talk to you about a really interesting statement that I've seen. Everybody understands the elections are coming up in Israel here over the next week or so, and this next week, in fact. Very interesting headline coming out of the air. Ilana, I want you to opine on this. Benjamin Netanyahu, and the headline was his words. He said that war in Gaza to topple Hamas is likely inevitable. Now that's admitting plenty. Now, was that done as an election headline, or is there more to that story, Ilana?
Well, it's both. There is good reason to believe that war is coming, and I don't doubt that. The timing of this statement, he actually went further and said not only that war is inevitable, but he said it could even happen within the next 4 days, which is just before the election. The election is on Tuesday. And the election, as your listeners probably know by now, is a very complicated affair. There are 32 political parties that are vying for positions in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, and it's a very complicated affair to go and vote. The question is whether people will turn out.
You imagine people, 32 political parties. We can't even handle two here, for heaven's sakes. I mean, my golly, what does that look like, huh? All right, IQ, first I want to ask you this specifically. I just want to know from your heart of hearts, do you think Benjamin Netanyahu, does he remain the prime minister there? Does he win this election? Do you, in your heart of hearts, do you think, or do you think he's in jeopardy?
He's in jeopardy. Really, he's in jeopardy. You can never tell because he's been so long there and the Israeli public is tired of elections. It's in jeopardy. America should be aware that the previous prime minister, Sharon, believed that by removing Israel's military and civilian occupation of Gaza will allow the Arabs to create the first step for an independent state of Palestine. He was catastrophically wrong, because the Arabs of Gaza started a war of attrition against Israel, instead proving yet again that the Muslim Arabs have absolutely no intention of allowing any state in the Middle East other than a Muslim one. This is exactly why, over the last 70 years, Christian-dominated Lebanon has been reduced to less than 30% of the population, while the Muslims decreased to 70%. And the same for the Christians of the Holy Land, Syria, Egypt, and in my country, Iraq. The dispute over the Holy Land has absolutely nothing to do with land and or territory, but entirely to do with Muhammad's Quran. After all, Israel is only 8,000 square miles, while the Arabs control over 5 million square miles. That is, Israel is only 0.16% of the landmass of the Arabs, yet they begrudge her even this tiny sliver. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, listen, a big thank you here to IQ, Al Razuli, and Ilana Friedman. And all right, next story, folks, I want to cover with you is one of great importance for everybody. So you want to listen and pay attention to this. And this is regarding Google search. The ramifications of this are wildly significant. This is going to impact everybody. And I got to tell you what, Google is up to no good. Let's just put that out there. And that's, I guess it's a question you have to answer. Do you think they're up to no good? More Viewpoint in just a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
When you go to Google search, what do? You type in and whatever comes up, it's like opening up the Bible. It's like whatever is in John, you expect to be gospel. Well, it's the same thing with Google search kind of thing. Any of these search engines, you go in and you don't expect there's a lot of funny business going on the other side. At least I never thought of that. I don't know about you. But, you know, one of the interesting headlines on this story I seen here was out of Fortune. Let me read this to you. Why were Facebook, Amazon, Apple, and Google allowed to get so big? And I started thinking, that's a hell of a question. I mean, because they are huge. They're significant. In fact, I get some numbers and stuff I'll share with you in a moment here, but they are truly significant. And this is a big story with antitrust and all that is going to come down here, potential problems. And I also wonder if this is not one of those stories that could unite the left and the right. I know you're scratching your head right about now when I say that. Come on. Nothing would unite these people. But here we go here. Let's bring on here Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist, philosopher, patriot. He focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Also, the distinguished Arnetta Notkin is here. Arnetta is a producer, commentator here on America Out Loud. She has a 30-year career working on Wall Street and certainly understands these kinds of things when it comes to big tech and antitrust and that sort of thing. So I started to think about this, Dennis, a little bit with this whole story about the left and the right, because in that Fortune article I just mentioned a moment ago here, it referenced Elizabeth Warren. And I mentioned with her run for the White House that she is, you know, looking at this as a potential issue to dismantle the tech giants like Facebook, Google. And normally the right doesn't like to talk about these things when it comes to antitrust and that sort of thing. But just in a weird sort of way, do you think this could be one of those issues that could you potentially unite the left and the right?
Yeah, I actually think it is, in that both the left and the right are deathly afraid of technology. And so, you know, they have a common fear of the unknown, and it very well could unite both sides to kill the goose that's been laying the golden egg for the internet for a very long time. So yeah, I could see that happening. Whether or not it's a good thing that happens, I'm still pretty unclear as to whether or not political and social realignments of the way that the internet has come and evolved to be is something that we really understand how to make work. And bear in mind, you know, everybody talks about this whole antitrust thing that knows anything is basically saying, you know, this is going to take years to play out. It's a very slow moving train wreck.
It is. I thought that'd be an interesting place to start. But you've been hearing the stories, Dennis, of this Robert Epstein. He's the senior research psychologist at the American Institute for Behavioral Research and Technology. And he's been pretty outspoken. He's been out there quite a bit here. He's been on multiple programs. And speaking of politicians on the Hill, all right, this is a guy who voted for Hillary Clinton, they say, who really supported her, like the campaign. And he's obviously a left-leaning Democrat, not a conservative. In fact, I've seen one of the hearings where he kind of laughed at one of the politicians. I think it was Ted Cruz, in fact, laughed at him and said, oh, come on, I'm not anything close to that. But he's coming out and saying that they have been really scamming the top here and stealing, really changing the, probably changed millions and millions of votes here in the 2016, definitely the 2018, they said, and they are pretty lit for 2020. Are you concerned with that at all? I mean, think about just that issue here with Google search and the fact that they can change an election. Is that a concern? Do you see that as a problem?
No, not really. I mean, you know, people on both sides are going to be highly activated in this upcoming election. And there is already noise out there like you wouldn't believe. I think there may be less noise this cycle out because a lot of these companies have now adapted to having better tools to tamp down what really were a huge, in 2016, there was a gigantic wave of internet advertising that came around basically just to make money because you know they knew people were activated. You've seen some of that coming out in recent months where memes have shown up on the internet that were quickly tamped down by all of the social media networks. And so hopefully this time out, whatever animus you see on the internet will be real hatred.
Yeah, it could be, could be. Arnetta, this Google deal here, the fact that they can change potentially, and you can, and what he says is you can't even, you won't even know it's happening. Everything is done in the middle of, you know, with no daylight. You will not even know this has happened. And talk about being sideswiped. And they can actually change the end result. Is that a little scary to you?
It's not only scary, but I'll take it a step further because I am totally concerned about it. The step further that I will take it is the timing of these investigations and the antitrust investigations and who's involved in it. When you said, could this be a bipartisan? Well, let me just throw this out there. What, just think about this for a moment. What if this is a setup for, I believe the one side is more genuine in their investigations than others, but the FTC alone, there are five commissioners and a chairman. And the two Democratic commissioners voted against the FTC suits against Facebook, Google, and others. They voted against them. And for antitrust and other issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's the FTC, all of the big market liberals are talking about how awful this is. Warren is saying break up big tech. Mm-hmm. It's almost they protest too much. And in the attorney generals that are calling for this investigation, 26 of state attorney generals are Democrats who the same cabal has sued President Trump every time he takes a breath. Mm-hmm. So just let's throw that, take it out a little further. Okay. We know for a fact, it's been proven that these biases were thrown towards for the benefit of Hillary Clinton in 2016 and to progressive candidates in 2018. So is this a setup to nullify any outcry against these big tech giants in whatever they plan for 2020? A lot of whistleblowers have come forward and said there are huge machinations to throw everything possible to stop Trump from being reelected in 2020. These are whistleblowers that were employees in these tech companies, including videos done by investigative reporters in conversations that's the fact, changing the algorithms, everything. So why this investigation now? Is it to throw up this sort of tar baby, you know, don't throw me in the briar patch type of thing? So that it nullifies, they come to a conclusion that, no, there's no antitrust. No, there's not this. No, there's not that.
Well, if that's the case, Arnetta, it would have to be both the left and the right playing that game then, because let's be clear of one thing here. Back to the attorney generals that are, so you've got like about all the states with the exception of California and Alabama that with the exception of those two states, every other state in the union is right now investigating the antitrust. With Google being as big as they are and with the search engine, you have to remember when you go in there and search, they have measures in place, which is what this Epstein has proven and talking about, which allow them to put whatever stories to the top that they wish. So they can ramp that up, ramp that down, push it around, get you to believe and think what is people are talking about, what really, that's what search is all about. It's the leading stories or the leading conversations or the leading thoughts or whatever comes up when you type in whatever it is. That's a big control measure. Now, a lot of people say that that makes them like a utility. That makes them like a water company, electric company, or some sort of a utility. And that that could be very, very serious. Now, there have been talks, and you've probably seen this, I've seen, where they've talked about making that a public utility, allow them to take a piece of that search back, but allow other organizations, other tech companies to also divvy in the same search deal. In other words, make it a public utility. What's wrong with that?
Well, there's nothing wrong with it, but to tell you the truth, it won't change a thing. Okay. Wow. And here's why. To the antitrust question. If you look at the distribution of ownership of advertising revenue, which is where all this antitrust stuff comes from, you will see that these companies still remain, none of them exceed 50% of the market. So the argument that they have an antitrust going is pretty weak, you know, on an individual basis. And that was where the attorney generals were coming from, targeting Google in particular. Antitrust is based on revenue, and if they're 30%, of the revenue base, they're nowhere near to 50%.
But they're manipulating the data, Dennis. They're manipulating the data. That's already been proven now with all. They're manipulating the result, the search results that are coming up for the American consumer. Isn't that a problem?
No, because here's the way they're manipulating the results. Google, along with all of the other search engines that used to be there, and any search engine, if you broke them up, any search engine in the future is going to all go by the same thing. All of these search engines are pay to play, whether you know it or not. The advertisers bid on who gets to be first. And because it's basically a pay to play environment, whether or not you break these people up, the richest advertisers are still going to appear first at all times.
Right. What about the secret handshakes and these partnerships with people like Twitter on social media, that they put the Twitter tweets at the top of their search and are biased towards what those topics are versus posting the other results? They don't have quiet handshakes and partnerships with other social media that are competitors of Twitter.
What about that, Dennis?
Well, so here's the way that works, okay? So the companies that have evolved to date, and here is an area where the utility aspect of it comes into play. If you change these companies from private companies to utilities, then they have to let all of these other people in, which basically will cause, again, all of them to migrate back to the pay-to-play model. And we've seen a number of times in the evolution over the internet since the 90s, and I've been around this thing for a while, and people have tried it several times, but it always comes back to the same thing. They eventually all realign to the same economic conditions and factors in terms of who stacks up to whom. It takes typically between 1 to 3 years for that alignment to occur, and it will occur over and over again because that's just the nature of the technology. Whether it's a public utility or a series of private companies, the economics remain the same. So the argument right now from a political standpoint is really whether or not what you want to do is change the rules in the current day, knowing full well that from a regulatory standpoint, the rules are going to reemerge and go back to the basic economics of how things work again. And from a regulatory standpoint, if I were a regulator, I would basically be looking at the underlying structure and saying, do I really want to alter the structure of the entire multi-billion-dollar industry that is the internet And what are the consequences of doing that? I mean, never mind the politics, man. There's more stuff on the internet that has to do with making money. And if you want to mess with that, I'm pretty sure you're going to have a lot of industry people basically coming back and going like, do you understand exactly what you're about to do?
Well, Dennis, the problem is this. There are a lot of evil people in the tech world. Let me be clear of a few things I want to put out here. There are a lot of evil-minded people that live in this world. It is not a world of lollipops and fairy tales, I have to say. And so a lot of people would argue back and say, no, these people have far too much power. Let me give you a couple of numbers here. Listen to this now. Google and Facebook together control about 60% of digital ad revenue in the United States. All right, 60. 64% of mobile ad revenue they control. Apple has about 45% of the smartphone market. And listen to this number. This is a staggering. Amazon, 47%. Of all e-commerce sales, this is unbelievable to me, goes through Amazon. 47%, that's amazing. It's psychology driven, it's all psychological, and you're able to change the you're able to change the water cooler conversation, which is really what search is all about, Dennis. And I think that could be a real problem. So I don't know, I think times are changing, and I'm not sure how you continue to go down this road, my friend.
Why not disclose that if you, who their top advertisers are? Because they don't. They give you the option. When I even researched the antitrust, it was Washington Post, New York Times, and the people that are very hostile to, you know, what's going on politically in the country. So why not then disclose that your top advertisers are the Amazons, the Washington Post, and the New York Times? If you're going to only limit search results by who's paying the bill, then I think that needs to be, the public needs to be aware of that, so then they can make their own decision that this is not the gospel.
That's a good point. That's a very interesting point, Dennis, yeah.
Well, and there lies the point there. The other publications that don't have the money to bid top dollar on the search engine optimization are because of this. Because if you say I like free markets, you know, if you say I like free markets in a free market system, you know, richest guy wins, right? You know, and if you want to argue that you want to break that free market system so that lesser companies that do not have as much money to pay the highest advertising rate for prime position can get in there into prime position. You know, like, let me tell you, man, you know, you just made a socialist argument right there.
Yeah. Well, let me tell folks right now that Dennis has a very interesting article on this topic. You want to hear more about the thoughts on this, people. And there's a lot of backstory to this conversation. It's not going to go away, clearly. You'll find that on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com. Look that up over the air as well. Also, a lot of interesting news, a lot of interesting stories back on the platform at AmericaOutloud.com, including one right now, Fighting the Wrong Drug War, you'll find up there. We did with Dr. Ron Martinelli and Michael Johns. You'll find that up there right now from the Voice of a Nation. And speaking of the Voice of a Nation, I want to invite you in on Monday. If you're listening to this on talk radio on Sunday, or whether it's podcast after the fact, join us on Monday for the Voice of a Nation. You'll hear a pretty big show here about the puppet master Barack Obama, and it gets into all of these investigations. There's also a fantastic article on the front page and the top stories with Spygate. Enter the Puppet Master Barack Obama, which is a must read from Colonel Jim Warshak. You'll hear more of his opinions on Monday, friends, on the Voice of a Nation there. Join me there. Big show here, and tremendous thank you to all of our experts here today. And friends, it's all back there on America Out Loud, and it's time to get involved and get loud.